Yeah, I'm going to talk about what was just mentioned here. So this is a project which includes a piece of software called Tensor Network, and it's been developed in collaboration with a lot of people at Google and X, in particular Chase Roberts, who's a software engineer at Google and has now moved to X. And here at Perimeter, myself and Martin Gunal, postdocs, have been mainly working on this. Before I start, so Tensor Networks, Giffrey was talking a lot about a particular Tensor Network, the Mera, but Tensor Networks in general are perhaps the best tool we have at the moment for simulating near-term quantum devices. Because they're sort of the state-of-the-art means of simulating the evolution of quantum systems anyway for pure physics purposes, but if you want to verify and test your quantum device, they're one of the best tools available, and they've been used on in large-scale computations on supercomputers to try to simulate random quantum circuits and so on. So they're becoming increasingly important as these NISQ devices scale up and people want to understand what they're doing and whether they're doing the right thing. So that said, I haven't plugged this in, so that's not going to work. That said, let me explain briefly what a tensor network is. So let's say you have a quantum state of 3 qubits. So you can write the quantum state quite simply as a sum over some basis elements, ijk. They just can be up or down in each case. And there's some object psi ijk, which is just the wave function. Right? Now, a tensor network is built up of tensors. And in fact, this psi ijk is already a tensor. It's an object, a tensor in a very simple sense, right? A tensor in the sense that it's a multi-dimensional array of numbers. Right? It's got 3 dimensions in this case. And we have a diagrammatic notation for that. We can write psi ijk as some blob psi with 3 legs, one corresponding to each index. Okay. And tensor networks are all about just decomposing, well, at least when it comes to tensor network representations of quantum states, it's all about decomposing these blobs psi into more blobs. So a matrix product state is a decomposition of this psi into a blob for each site. Now, Giffrey's talk was about the Mera. The Mera is a tensor network you can think of as a quantum circuit, where each of the blobs is a unitary gate. That's not generally the case. In this case, these don't need to be unitary, but you can think of it as something like a quantum circuit, if you like, that prepares the state. So here we've got 3 blobs. These blobs now have an internal leg connecting to the nearest neighbor blob. And if you sum over these internal legs, contract those tensors along those indices, then you get the original psi ijk. And the key thing about tensor networks is that you can efficiently represent many states by choosing a relatively small dimension for these internal legs. So I can drop all, typically in tensor network diagrams, we drop these labels and we just write the blobs like this. We understand that these are the external indices, the basis states, and these are internal ones that are summed over. And we call these internal ones the bonds. And they have some dimension chi, which we can vary. And depending on the dimension chi, we can represent more or fewer different quantum states with less or more entanglement. The larger the chi, the more entanglement you can have between the different sites in the system in this case. And these guys are just the physical spins, as a reminder. OK, but there are many different tensor network states. So here's another kind of tensor network state. It's just a tree shape, as you can see. There's a tensor at the top and then another 2 tensors. And they, again, if you contract these inner indices, you produce some state which lives on these spins at the bottom. There's the Mera, which I've, again, drawn here. This is the tensor network that Giffrey was talking about, composed of isometric and unitary tensors. There are many different tensor networks, is what I'm trying to say. There are many different ways of decomposing a state into different tensors. And they all have different advantages, but the key properties, or the typical properties of a tensor network, is that they are able to efficiently approximate ground states of natural Hamiltonians with local interactions. And they allow you to efficiently compute correlation functions, observables, entanglement entropies, and things like this. So they're very useful for doing simulations of physical systems. So there are many different ones. There's the matrix product state, which is good for one-dimensional systems with local interactions. That's great because it's also relatively simple to code up in your computer to do simulations. And it's also the cost of the computation scales with this bond dimension chi to the power of 3, which is pretty good for a tensor network algorithm. These three tensor networks that I mentioned, they're good for both 1D and 2D systems with local interactions. But they get a little bit harder to code, and the cost starts to scale a bit faster with this bond dimension. And the Mera tensor network, which is for now mostly good for 1D systems, but there are 2D versions, which if you had enough computational power, you could use. They precisely capture many properties of critical systems, a special feature of Meras, which is very nice, but they're also harder to code than matrix product states, and the cost scales again faster in this bond dimension, depending on which variant of the Mera you choose. So basically, anything beyond MPS, matrix product states, are harder to code, computationally more demanding, but they might capture something that you really want to capture for your particular problem. So they might, for example, capture many of the properties of critical systems. So there are interesting reasons to use networks beyond MPS. They might allow you to capture 2D systems, for example, another example. So in comes the Tensor Network library. Okay, the Tensor Network is a software package. You can go and download it on GitHub. And there's a paper about it which just describes what it is, essentially. Tensor Network allows you to, using a simple syntax in the Python programming language, describe a tensor network. So this is a very simple tensor network with two tensors. You create the content of the tensors. So this is just a vector full of ones. You create the network, you add the node A, you add the node B, and you connect the leg 0 of node A with the leg 0 of node B. And then you can say, I want to contract those two, carry out the summation, and print the final result, which in this case is just the inner product of two vectors, all ones, 10 integers each, so the answer is 10. Okay. It's a very simple example to show you the syntax. Another syntax you can use, there's a compact syntax called NCON. NCON is an application originally written for MATLAB for contracting tensor networks. We support the same syntax. So you can do tensornetwork.ncon, give the two tensor contents for these two nodes in the network, and tell NCON how they're connected. It's a more compact notation. It's great for simple networks like this. But if you want to do something, if you want to iteratively construct your network or construct it according to parameters, you might want to use the more explicit syntax. But if you have a simple network, this is great. So that prints the same number at the end. So this is what the library looks like to use. Now, why would you want to use this library? Apart from it being relatively nice to use in terms of the syntax, it's written in Python, but it's able to use as a backend a number of interesting software libraries. TensorFlow in particular, which is used often for machine learning, but TensorFlow, and JAX, which is another lesser known library, which is also used for machine learning. Both of these support things like automatic differentiation and can be used to design machine learning algorithms. And NumPy is a standard numerical library for Python. But the advantages of TensorFlow and JAX is that they can allow you to do your computations on accelerators like GPUs and so-called tensor processing units, which are developed at Google, which can accelerate computations by large amounts. So we've been, part of this project has been investigating to what extent we can utilize this hardware to improve the speed of computations and take advantage of this stuff, which is going to be important when we start scaling up to, say, larger quantum simulations, or if we want to do 2D systems in physics simulations. So here's an example of a speed up you can get by running your tensor network code on an accelerator. So these top curves here represent using one single CPU core for optimization of a tree tensor network for a quasi one-dimensional system in this case, but you can ask me details later if you want. And this orange curve is the same simulation performed on a top of the line NVIDIA GPU. And you can see that the speed up is roughly a factor of 100. Which is very good. It's the difference between a simulation taking a day and most of a year, so, or 2 days, let's say. So that's a very useful speed up. The speed up you get depends on the algorithm you end up using, but for certain algorithms, you can get these large speed ups, which really changes the computation you make in your head. which algorithm should I use for this problem? This now becomes a much more viable choice, for example, for a number of problems. So that's pretty much everything I wanted to say. I wanted to point out that in this library, there's example code included. You can test out evolving wave functions using a trotter circuit. You can do matrix product state computations. You can use tree tensor networks in the mirror. There's more to come, and there's already more than that in there, actually. And upcoming features, there will be more. We're looking at ways of automatically parallelizing, and very soon you'll be able to automatically compute the optimal way of contracting these tensor networks. We're exploring the acceleration using tensor processing units more. It's an interesting direction as well, because this hardware is very specialized, but it could be used in certain situations to get a big speed up potentially. Experimenting using automatic differentiation, which there's some examples in the literature of this being very beneficial for certain tensor network problems. And there are applications of tensor networks to machine learning, which are very natural once you have all this in a machine learning framework like TensorFlow and so on. So that's another interesting area. Okay, that's all I wanted to say.
You said these methods are the best for doing simulation, and I wanted to
exactly well, one of the best methods.
Well, exactly what you mean by simulation, because a lot of these quantum supremacy, you know, proposals and so on.
Yes.
It's about you know, sampling from a distribution.
Right. Right.
It's hard to sample from, and there's a requirement on the precision then of your.
Right. Right. So there are two possibilities. I mean, one can try to compute the exact wave function and store the whole thing, but that's potentially very costly, and it's not exactly what the quantum computer is doing, right? The quantum computer is taking a measurement in the end. So you can actually take advantage of the fact that the quantum computer requires measurements. You can more efficiently do the tensor network computation if you know you're just going to measure at the end. And then you can run many iterations of this procedure to sample using a tensor network. So that's one way of doing this simulation. Yeah, it's more you get an efficiency gain from doing it that way. Yeah.
And is it the same with just calculating expectations of local observables?
Yeah. If you don't need the full wave function, you just want one number. That's typically a lot easier to do, a lot less computationally intensive, and you don't need to store the whole thing. Right, you only need to store this one number in the end. Yeah.
Question. If not, let's thank the speaker.